Hello, I'm Charles Hubbell, your host and narrator for our podcast series, Deceived, The Mu Years. Deceived, The Mu Years is the true story of one young man's compelling, at times terrifying, former involvement with the martial arts cult Chung Mu Kwan.
The following story you are about to hear is true. It took place between 1980 and 1996. Most of the names have been changed. There are other versions of the story. My name is Russell Johnson, and this one is mine.
Deceived, The Mu Years, Episode 7. Moving to Lowry. In 1986, James Holt's father owned a four-unit apartment building in North Minneapolis on Lowry Avenue. The building was run down and in desperate need of renovation. Craig, James, and Russell struck an agreement with James' father. In exchange for the renovation, they received rent for a year. The majority of the work would be done by Craig and Russell, with minimal help from James. They went through every unit, removing old, smelly wallpapers with a steamer, repairing the crumbling plaster walls, texturing the ceilings, installing new carpet and painting. They performed most of the work at night after their jobs and training at school, again running on just a few hours' sleep.
When Craig and I started on the renovations at Lowry, it was in a state of disrepair. We worked on it day and night, each of us pulling our own weight. Lowry was in North Minneapolis and not in the best part of town. When we started renovating the building, there was one tenant left, a prostitute named Rhonda, and she lived across the hall. She would bring me beers. She reminded me of some of the girls that I grew up with. Rhonda was cool.
When Russell moved into the unit, he had to sell his waterbed because the rooms were too small for its frame.
My bedroom at Lowry was too narrow for my waterbed to fit, so I sold it and I brought the money down to school. At 22, I found myself sleeping in a bunk bed, sharing a bedroom with another assistant. I was driving a piece of shit car. The last of my possessions were gone.
As the apartments were renovated, they would be rented out to more Chung Mu Kwan assistants and instructors, one by one, with the exception of apartment number 4. Again, 4 being considered an unlucky number in the Mu, it would remain vacant. Those who lived there called each other by their title and showed each other the same respect as in the school. If Russell was about to eat, he would check to see if his higher belts wanted anything.
Some instructors have alienated students from their families and friends, then tried to fill the void. Several former students told us they were pressured to move in with other believers.
Why was that done?
To have more control over you, so you had no other outside influence other than through Chung Mu Kwan.
The apartment building itself was referred to as Lowry. The homes where instructors lived were named according to their location. The national instructors lived in Crystal, Minnesota, and Keith Brown lived in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, so they were referred to as Crystal and Robbinsdale. Lowry was a poorly insulated building incapable of holding heat. The first winter there, they filled the oil heating tanks, which cost a lot of money. They went through that oil in 1 month's time, and when it was gone, they were unable to fill it again. They ended up without heat during a cold Minnesota winter. Lowry got so cold at night that Russell could see his breath, and they used propane heaters to try and heat the rooms. Russell received another car, an old Delta 88 from Murphy Gilman. It was a beater that another instructor had passed on to Murphy. The term passing on was normally used when higher belts gave something to lower belts. It was not unusual for beat-up cars to make the rounds. This 88's front end was a little smashed up, which is why the car was nicknamed Leon, in reference to boxer Leon Spinks. The car didn't have heat, so in order to drive it during the winter, Russell had to spray the windshield with liquid de-icer, then scrape the windows as he drove. It was the coldest winter he'd ever experienced.
It was the coldest winter I remember. I was cold at home. I was cold in my car. I was fucking cold.
While living at Lowry, there was always some school project that needed to be done. This usually meant staying up all night. It could be painting picture frames or working on an instructor's car. Anything the school could think of to keep them from sleeping at night. Going away party. In March of 1987, the school held a going away party for instructor Andy. Russell had known Andy since they were both white belts, Andy was moving to the Chicago area to work for a school printing company. The higher belt instructors would use Andy's transfer as a way of showing that Andy tried hard, and now he had the opportunity to have a good career at a school-owned company that Russell believed was financed with the invested money from students. Russell was told the Chicago instructors were in the process of setting up other companies and making plans for building communities with nice houses for instructors. He was told that instructors there made good money and drove nice cars, and if he tried hard, like instructor Andy, Russell might one day have the opportunity to own a school or work for a school-owned company.
Years later, I met former instructors from Chicago, and they were also told lies about how well Minnesota instructors were doing. Each state believed that the other was doing well.
Years later, Russell would learn the truth. There were no new Moo communities being built. In fact, instructors from that time reported 6 instructors were sharing an apartment. The instructors were not driving new cars. Working conditions at the printing company were long hours for low pay, and sleeping next to the printing press. Russell will always feel a closeness to Andy. He considered him family. He remembered their hanging out together after being trained by Aiden. But once you became higher belts, those friendships changed, and they rarely saw each other, except at the occasional school party.
Andy was one of the first friends I made in school. Knowing him, training with him, was one of the most enjoyable experiences of my training. I had lived about 4 miles from school, and after training, he would give me a ride home. When he was selected to move to Chicago, I remember the sadness I felt. The Moo had used this as a way to show that Andy had made it, and I could too. My understanding of his experience in Chicago was it was not what he or any of us expected.
Getting fired from Shamrock. In 1983, while Russell was in high school, he started working at Shamrock Industries. He liked the work, had health benefits, and it was a well-paying union job. Attending the school's morning classes, he'd have to ask the instructor's permission to change and leave for work, second shift, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. From the time he signed up for black belt courses, Russell started being late to work most of the time. Though only by a few minutes, it was a union job, and there was a strict number of times you could be absent or late. With each time you went over that limit, you were given a warning, also known as a pink slip. Russell trained at the Brooklyn Center School, which was about 20 to 25 minutes from work, meaning if he wanted to make it to work with a few minutes to spare, he had to leave school by 2:30 at the latest. Instructors knew he had to be to work by 3 p.m. He'd ask permission to leave for work, and they would get into some long conversation regarding his training or a point that they were trying to make. All the while, the clock ticked. He'd stand there in a panic because he was going to be late once again. The whole point was that school came first, before his job, even before his family. When Russell still had his Trans Am, he would drive over 100 miles per hour trying to make it to work on time, despite the fact that the instructors would tell him not to speed. By 1987, he was on his last warnings regarding his attendance at work. Russell was at work and received a call from Keith again, telling him that he needed to leave work and come to the school. Russell did not question the order. He just replied, "Yes, head instructor," and told his employer that he was going home sick. In April 1987, Russell was fired from Shamrock. His older sister Patty worked there, and he had friends there that he had known since he was a teenager. Most of the instructors in school didn't have many friends outside the school, but Russell did. There was the person that he was at work and the person he was in school. Getting fired from Shamrock pushed him further under the influence of school.
I had lost my car, my credit, my stereo, my bed, and now my job. But the worst part was, I was losing me.
By April 1987, he was 6th section, one belt below black belt. A group of 6th section assistants, including Russell, had earned the opportunity to learn how to run or handle a school. Since the beginning of black belt training, Russell had been told he'd be able to retire at the age of 35. Keith would say Russell was entering into his next phase of becoming an instructor, and that Keith was entering the phase in which he would be semi-retired and raise his family. Keith used himself as an example to show that he did it, and Russell could too.
And for her son, Chung Mu Kwan became a career.
He says, I will be making a good living when I become an instructor. He says, this is a life process for me, and I'll be able to retire at 35.
Keith would say that master would say 1,000 times say, one time see. In Mu speak, until we see it once, we won't believe. In other words, seeing is believing. A few years after Keith left, he admitted to Russell that he didn't make enough money to support his family, let alone retire. Keith would blame Smoking Jared for the broken financial promises. All along, Keith was still keeping the faith in Master Kim. Keith would testify during the federal tax case. Murphy's promotion. Murphy Gilman and Russell had been friends since junior high school. They graduated high school together. Now they were sharing Chung Mu Kwan training experience. There was a genuine friendship between them. When they were both sixth section, Murphy and Russell dressed up as Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble for a school Halloween party. Murphy started to be fast-tracked to instructor. Before Russell tested for first degree, Murphy was promoted to second degree black belt without ever being first degree. With that, everything changed between them. They were no longer friends. They were instructor and assistant. Russell did not blame Murphy for this. It was the way the system worked, and it was that way for a reason. Chung Mu Kwan worked on a system of information control. You were told what you needed to know for each level. Although Russell knew the instructors and trained with them in school, he was never invited to their homes for dinner or saw any of them socially outside of school functions. Murphy and Russell both lived at Lowry, but Russell wasn't invited to his apartment. He did go to Murphy's apartment once. The prominently displayed wall hanging with a picture of a tiger had been a gift from Russell to Murphy. One night they'd been at a bar where an Asian lady was selling pictures. Russell bought the tiger picture for himself, but saw how much Murphy liked it and gave it to him as a gift. Seeing it on his wall was Murphy's way of showing that he did not forget their friendship. Russell figured if the roles had been reversed, it would have been the same thing. Still, Russell did feel the loss of a friend with his promotion. Within a year, Murphy would be promoted to third-degree black belt.
One night, Murphy and I were out having a few beers in Elk River, and we started driving down this road, and all of a sudden there was thousands of frogs. Frogs in front of us, frogs behind us. There was nothing we could do but keep driving. Admittedly, Murphy and I have a morbid sense of humor, and the image of frog body parts hitting the wheel wells enters our minds. Laughing, Murphy would call this the night of the suicidal frogs. In many cultures, killing one frog is bad luck. At this point, Murphy and I were screwed.
Learning how to handle school. As Russell began to learn how to handle school, he would learn the classifications for people. While being taught these techniques, Russell would reflect back and remember them being used on him. The first part of learning to run a school was learning how to sign up students. Matt Kemps taught Russell that when someone came into the school, they were referred to as an information. When an information came into the school, the goal was to get them into the practice area for a free lesson, then sign them up. During that time, Russell would conduct what the school called sideways conversation. It was a way of casually talking to the person to fish for information without them even knowing it. By the end of the free lesson, Russell would know what they did for a living, how much money they made, whether they were married or single, and what kind of car they drove. Russell would report this information back to Matt. After the students signed up, a membership photo was taken. Russell was learning how to handle a school on Saturdays, and at the end of the day, his learning group met up at School A on Lake Street. They sat in a group, passed around membership photos while discussing individual students. The goal was to get them into higher-priced classes and, ultimately, the black belt course. They called this handling.
A former instructor from Minnesota says his school kept dossiers on students with detailed personal information.
We looked for people's weaknesses. We would spend time in groups going over each individual student, and determining how to best hit their mind, as it was put.
They were being trained to be intuitive. There was a way to handle every type of person, no matter who they were, what position they held, doctor, lawyer, businessman, whatever. The school would build a profile with detailed personal information. The most disturbing part was they believed that they were doing this for the person's own good. Through this process, Russell realized how skillfully he'd been handled by Matt Kemp's. When Russell sent the letter to the school asking permission to return, he gave Matt everything he needed to handle him. Almost from the start of his training, Russell was aware of labeling. Women were no minds. Blacks were referred to as well-done ones, gays as Liberace types, and Jews were called hook noses. Russell found labeling people disturbing, but went along with it. He had a hard time with the view on women, having been raised by a single mother whom he held in high regard. As Russell came up in rank, he practiced often with Whitney Davidson. She trained just as hard as any of the men in school. It was said in Asia there was one seventh-degree female black belt and a couple second and third degrees in Chicago. The highest female black belt in Minnesota was a first degree. Gays would be allowed to sign up, but Russell was told it was not good to have many in the school. It was better to weed them out during the free lesson, make them feel a little pain. Russell trained with several black male assistants. They seemed to drop out around first degree. He felt that to call blacks well-done ones was racist. Russell had a hard time with this, because National Instructor Jordan was black and one of the highest-ranked instructors in the country. Russell wondered if Jordan knew that blacks had this label. How could he not? How did he justify this in his mind? Russell didn't remember knowing any instructors that were Jewish. These labels came from Master Kim and were part of the teachings. Russell was told that in Asia that there was a 5-year waiting list to train at a Chung Mu Kwan school. In Minnesota, however, there were very few Asians in school. He'd trained with a few, but none that ever had a higher belt, with the exception of National Instructor Jared, who was Filipino. Most Minnesota instructors and higher belts consisted of white males who knew little about Asia, other than what the school told them. Russell wondered why there was so few Asians in school here, with there being a waiting list in Asia. Answering the phone. Part of learning how to handle the school was learning how to answer the phone. You may not think there would be much to it, but there were a few things you had to know. Russell would pick up the phone and with a strong, commanding tone would say, "John C. Kim School of Chung Mu Kwan, how can I help you?" Most of the time, someone would call in for information about the school. You would try to get them to come to the school for a free lesson. Sometimes, you would get a call and it would go something like this. "John C. Kim School of Chung Mu Kwan, how can I help you?" The voice on the phone would ask, "Who is this?" Not knowing who was on the other end, or if it was a prankster, because the school supposedly had so many jealous trolls, Russell would respond in the same commanding voice, "Who is this?" The voice on the phone would say, "This is National Instructor Fred." Russell's voice would change to a more passive tone, and he'd say, "Hello, National Instructor. Be all right to say that this is Assistant Instructor Russell? Be all right to ask if there is anything I can do for school? Be all right to ask if yourself care for anything?" Then Russell would be told the reason for the call. Most of the time when talking to higher belts on the phone, it was a never-ending response of, "Yes, instructor. Yes, instructor. Yes, instructor." In school, Russell got very good at using the word yes. Using the words no or can't was frowned upon. Not using them made Russell more acceptable to their directions.
If you are not a member of the Mu and you happen to overhear a conversation between a lower belt and his higher belt on the phone, it might sound strange. I was at work, and this was before cell phones. My boss was standing next to me as I repeated on the phone a never-ending response of, "Yes, instructor, yes, instructor." He looked at me weirdly as I got off the phone and shook his head and said, "What the fuck was that?" and walked away.
When handling class, Russell was taught to have beginning students practice their movements in the mirror. This could be anything: kicking, kata, self-defense movement. Then he was to strategically place students that were in higher-priced courses behind them. This was done so the new student would have to see what they were learning and be tempted to get into higher-priced courses. Similarly, when Russell taught self-defense movements, he would pair two students, one from the regular course and the other from the higher-priced course. Russell would show the higher-priced course student a more advanced self-defense technique and the regular course students not. They could be the same belt level. Again, the idea was to persuade everyone to purchase higher-priced courses. Master Kim smoked. One of the things that Russell found surprising was that Master Kim smoked cigarettes. It was hard to comprehend how the man with the strongest mind and body could knowingly partake in a habit that was responsible for the death of millions. Keith himself was a smoker and claimed that Master Kim smoked because he wanted to see what effect it would have on his body. It was said that because of his higher Chung Mu Kwan form, Master Kim's body was not affected by it. Russell noticed others mimicking whatever Master Kim did. It seemed that smoking was no different. It was also known that National Instructor Jared smoked a lot, earning him the nickname Smoking Jared Jacobson. Russell didn't know how many instructors smoked, but it seemed safe to assume quite a few. Instructor see Master Du, Instructor Du.
I was walking through the parking lot of School C, and it was wintertime, and I saw Keith smoking in his car. Keith saw me and explained that Chung Mu Kwan training, if practiced right, there would be no negative effect from smoking. He went on to tell me that Master smoked to see what it would do to his body. He told me it was better that lower belts didn't know that instructors smoked. It might cause confusion. I myself was confused by this. I have lost both my parents due to smoking-related diseases. Cigarette smokers have a higher risk of developing several chronic diseases. Kim's death on Valentine's Day 2016 was due to coronary heart disease. The question to what effect smoking would have on his body is now known. As a student, I was told repeatedly that Kim was my connection to the world's strongest mind and body.
While learning to handle the school, Russell was trained to take special note if a doctor or lawyer came in. They would receive special handling because they had more money to spend on lessons, so sometimes they would rise through the ranks faster. The school was quick to point out the instructors in Chicago who had similar daytime occupations. Maybe it was easier for one professional to sign another professional. For years during his training, higher education was discouraged. Russell witnessed several students drop out of college while training in the school. Any money that would have gone toward college tuition was encouraged to go toward the school instead. Russell was told that Chung Mu Kwan training was a much better form of education. In the end, they said, he would be earning as much as someone with a degree.
Chung Mu Kwan instructors have urged students to abandon their future plans, saying lessons were a better education than college and that marriage would get in the way of training. Instead, students were pressured to move in with other believers.
To Russell, this special handling of professionals was a clear double standard. On one hand, he was discouraged from going to college himself, and on the other hand, he was told to treat new students who had those degrees differently. Russell watched them move up faster with their ability to pay off their contracts sooner. Handling and information. Part of learning to handle a school involved giving a private lesson. Each information that came into the school was treated differently. Everyone searching for something. That's what brought them to the school. The instructor's job was to figure out what that was. When they came in, instructors used sideways conversation to ask questions without revealing the agenda. The first thing was to get them to take a free private lesson. Once they agreed, have them sign a release form, which was known in the school as the DDM form, which stood for Death Doesn't Matter. There was a story that an information came into a Chicago school, signed the form, challenged the instructor, and the man was killed. The release form stated that death may occur during private lessons at the school, so they release all rights to hold the school responsible.
During the federal court trial, an instructor testified about a student killing a third party within the school, and after that, the school closed. I'm curious to know if this is someone who came in for information. I'm hoping during the podcast series this story will be told.
Most of the time, you wouldn't tell the information what was on the form. Other times, you'd see there was a guy who wanted to cause a problem, that is, fight. Then you made very clear the form says death may occur. If they still wanted to fight, you gave them a quarter and pointed at the gas station across the street and told them to go call 911, because after the fight, one of us would be leaving in an ambulance.
The 20-to-1 odds were too much for Cochran. He was beaten by the Chung Mu Kwan students and then threatened by the instructor, who's no longer there.
And he said, in front of all these people, I promise you that if you open up your school, we will kill you.
He threatened to kill you?
Yes, he did.
Were you scared?
I was terrified, numb.
Around that time, the police in several suburbs received reports of harassment, intimidation, and beatings by Chung Mu Kwan followers at some schools.
Private lessons usually consisted of an exercise and warm-up routine, followed by one of many different mental forms, including one called T position. After a few minutes, it becomes very painful to hold. Mental form is holding a pose in a difficult position, like a statue. Instructors would have students hold out their hand for a few minutes to see how they reacted. Sometimes they would cave and drop their arms right away. Other times they would be determined to hold the position. Instructors would qualify the information based on how they held the position. If they dropped their arms right away, they were weak-minded. If they held the position, they were strong-minded. The head instructor would ask, "Which way is he?" And Russell would answer, "Be all right to say strong-minded." They were also told to get in on the person during private lessons, which meant make the information feel pain. This practice was called an attitude adjustment. First, wear them out during the exercises, and then get in on them. When you got in on a person, they would change. Most became more submissive. Others would get upset, feeling that they had been suckered. Sometimes the head instructor would be at the school and he would tell you to get in on them just to see if you would do it.
I don't know how many people were assaulted during the course of getting a free lesson, but I have to imagine quite a few. The Mu had schools across the country, and free lessons were a daily thing.
Teach to levitate. Russell had an information come in who was what Master Kim would refer to as a Liberace type, or gay. It was said the school did not want too many of them around. It didn't want people to get the wrong idea about the school, so it was best to weed them out during the free lesson. This information wanted to learn to levitate. During the private lesson, Russell told the information that he was going to demonstrate an open hand form, also known as iron palm, or jung. Russell instructed him to relax his stomach, and that Russell would lightly touch him with an open hand strike. Russell did just that, except that the light touch lifted the man off the ground. The man fell to the floor and started crying. "Why did you hit me? Why? You can't teach me anything." When Russell's instructor asked which way the man was, Russell responded, "Weak-minded Liberace type." As a child, Russell had been severely bullied. Before joining the school, he had no tolerance for bullies. Now, the school's ideology was overtaking his own.
Sometimes I was about to give a free lesson, and Keith would tell me to make sure to get in on them. And that meant harder than normal. And I would respond by saying, "Yes, head instructor."
Signing up a woman. Russell was an assistant instructor at the Lake Street School when an attractive Korean girl came in to sign up for classes. The school was full of superstitions, and many of them had to do with women. It was the beginning of the month, and he was taught that if a strong male or even a male child was not signed as a new student before a female, then bad luck would befall the school. They called it making sure the first was covered. Before signing her, he called his higher belt. "Hello, head instructor. This is Assistant Instructor Russell. Be all right to ask if the first has been covered?" In her case, it was not. Normally, Russell would say that he was out of release forms and she would have to come back the next day. By that time, you prayed that a male student had signed up. She returned the next day after a male had signed up and Russell enrolled her as a student. Not too long into her training, she began to tell him that the instructors could read her mind. She also said her TV was starting to talk to her. At that point, Russell began to realize she had some kind of mental illness. Unbeknownst to her, the school kept files on students. What she thought of as mind reading was nothing more than observation followed by manipulation.
I believe they're a cult because they use intimidation, their abuse of power, their imbalance of power, and coercion to get money from individuals and to control them.
In her lawsuit, Frances says the school tried to control who she dated, and she alleges sexual harassment by one of the instructors.
I felt very uncomfortable. I felt he was harassing me, and he's an older man. I had no interest in him.
Russell was transferred to another school and lost track of what happened to her. Years later, Russell heard rumors that her mental condition worsened, and possibly she hung herself.
This man remembers a chilling test of obedience given by a Chung Moo Kwan official in Minnesota. How many of them would knock out a female student on command?
And almost everyone in this group of assistant instructors who were looking to become instructors raised their hand and said, yes, I would handle that without question.
My feeling is that once you begin to sign up students, you are responsible for your actions. That you should feel some kind of guilt or remorse for any harm that befalls them. That is one of the reasons a small few of us spoke out. Through the years, I have often wondered, where are all the other voices of the former instructors? The Moo's strength is in the silence of others.
Traveling and information control. When handling a school, if a student or instructor from another state came in and identified themselves as a member of the school, Russell was instructed to get their Chung Moo Kwan ID card and have them take a seat in the waiting area before calling his higher belts for instructions. It did not matter if the visitor was a higher belt than him or not. He was told to limit their conversation, making sure not to share information. Any instructor or assistant should be aware of these rules before ever stepping into school, and therefore their motives must be questioned.
Next week on Deceive the Moo Years, Episode 8, The Cult Shows Its True Colors, and I Am Hours Away from Death. Deceive the Moo Years is a production of Deja Moo, LLC. Recorded and produced by Alive and Social Podcast Network. Russell Johnson, producer and writer. Charles Hubble, host and narrator. David Bruskin, editor. Russ Meyer, co-writer and editor. Aaron Tro, sound producer. Brian Price, audio editor. Wyatt Sarber, sound engineering. Woon Tae Ryu is our advisor in South Korea. Authentic is our advertising representative. Deceive the Moo Years is represented by Young Entertainment Law.